around the clock, rain or shine, hot or cold, because crops and animals won't wait. Jimmy knows all about it because he lives it. And Jimmy knows what you're going through because he goes through it too. He's here to talk about it. It's seed and feed, chemicals and compost, vaccinations and irrigation. It's time for Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Hey, g'day to all you great stewards of the land. It is Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark, brought to you by First National Bank and Trust of Elk City and Sayre, Oklahoma. Happy New Year. We're in a new year. Are you guys excited yet? Better get excited because it's here. Anyway, currently here in the Gabe Gadget Mezzanet Center, we are 36.5 degrees, 83% humidity. Hollis, 38. Butler, 39. Arnett's, 39. 44 at Woodward, 42 at Beaver, and 40 degrees, I think that's Cherokee. Oh, that's Medford. 40 degrees at Medford and 39 degrees at Lahoma. Out here in the Panhandle, we've got pretty much the same thing. 38 at Lipscomb, 36 at Dozer, 45 at Odell, and 38 at Childress. So, anyway, been pretty chilly the last couple days. Man, it was a beautiful Saturday. Anyway, just a heads up, everybody, get ready. Little birdie told me that coming in here in about 2.5-3 weeks, around the 22nd, 23rd, 24th, we got a polar vortex headed our way. Although it's 2 to 3 weeks out, things can change. You might as well get ready. We're going to pay for having such a mild winter so far, it looks like. My little birdie told me that the problem is those 3 or 4 days of that week of the 23rd, 4th, in that deal, you know, our highs might be in the negatives. That makes sense to you. And also, and it's going to affect the whole country, not just Oklahoma. I mean, it's going to go as far south as the Rio Grande. It looks like a cold one. But the problem is there's a chance that we might have a foot to foot and a half of snow on the ground before this thing hits. So get ready. Get your water all situated, your cabin pastures situated. Get ready to put some bedding down. The whole works. I'm so excited. It's not even funny. Moved my cabin date up to January from February, so I didn't have to do this. So if this happens, it's not gonna be good. Anyway, so just giving you a heads up. You know, like I said, it's still 2-3 weeks out. So, and it's a prediction, but they said the polar air is switching from one side of the earth to our side coming up here in about 2-3 weeks. So prepare yourself appropriately about that. Okay, nothing exciting went on this weekend at the Clark Farms. Just doing some regular feeding and been rolling some barbed wire up on a place I rented next to us out there. We've been getting that wire cleaned up off of it. And thanks to Mr. Tony up there in the Custer City, Thomas area for loaning me his barbed wire roller upper. And anyway, it's working out good. I might be half done. I don't know. It's a mess. So anyway, we've got that going on. And anyway, I hope everybody has a really good year and a prosperous year. And that's over at the round table this morning at Southbound and Sayre. And the information that I got out of there, I should have recorded it, but they'd probably be mad at me. But anyway, we're talking how much fertilizer it takes per acre of tomatoes. And anyway, it had another guy, he's trying to swap me tomatoes for okra. He wouldn't come up with hey, how many pounds of tomatoes do I get for a pound of okra? We couldn't come to that agreement, but we'll get it. But anyway, it's pretty interesting. And then sugardaddy.com was there, Mr. Brian. We'll go with Mr. Brian. Anyway, he was making fun of me, and I said, hey, same thing goes back at you. You know, everybody was making fun of you because you started growing sugar cane down there in Dalhousie. So, man, it just gets interesting. You guys ought to come by sometime and join in on the conversation. It gets pretty comical and sometimes serious. Some guys get mad and leave and the whole nine yards. But anyway, well, let's see what happened in the Big Three overnight. The trading was closed yesterday and started back up this morning, so not a whole lot going on there. We'll get the update on the market compared to Friday. But anyway, speculators last week increased their net long positions or bets on higher prices in soybean futures while reducing bearish bets on corn, according to the data from the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. Investors held a net 11,497 futures contracts in soybeans in the 7 days that ended December 26. That's up from 10,486 contracts the week earlier. Money managers reduced their net short positions or bets on lower prices in corn to 172,000 future contracts, and that's down from 182,000 the week earlier. In wheat, investors raised their net shorts in hard red winter wheat futures to 30,758 contracts. That's up from 28,000 the week earlier, and that's the largest bearish position since the 5th of December. Hedge funds and other large investment firms reduced their net short position in soft red winter wheat to 60,716 contracts, and that is down from the 66,000 the previous week. That's the smallest bearish position for soft red winter wheat since August 1st. Weather in our farm belt. Freezing fog is expected tonight in parts of central Nebraska, according to the National Weather Service. More is expected tomorrow and tomorrow night. Snow is also possible in that area. In central and southern Kansas, snow and rain are likely will start late Thursday and continue into Friday. Minor snow accumulations are possible with the greatest potential across central Kansas. A second and stronger storm system is expected earlier next week with accumulating snow possible. And the last I checked, I think Saturday, they were calling for possible snow this Thursday here in western Oklahoma and northwestern Oklahoma, and then again Monday or Tuesday. But I think they've switched that to rain. So anyway, time will tell when it gets here. All right, we got that going. Let's just do a quick update on what the market's doing right now as far as grains are concerned. March corn is 462, down a little over 8. May is 476, down 8. And July is 486, down 7. Soybeans for January, 1275, down 18. March is 1273, down 24. And May is 1280, down 26. Soybean meal, 380.30 a short ton, down $5.70. March is 378.10, down 7.90. May is 377.60, down 7.20. Soybean oil for January, 47.53, down 31. March is 47.98, down 20. And May soybean oil, 48.36, down 21. See what wheat's doing. Hard red winter wheat. March, 627, down 14. May is 631, down 12. And July is 634, down 12 also. Cotton, let's see what's going on with cotton. It's in the red today. March, 79.71, down 129. May is 80.88, down 127. And July is 81.64, down 119. Sugar, it's about almost 21 cents a pound. He's up a little bit today, so it's not doing as well as he has been here this year. I've seen it as high as 28 cents a pound, so I don't know whether he sold or what he did, but he's losing money right now if he hadn't sold. West Texas intermediate crude oil is February. It's changed on me there. 71.14, down 51 cents. March is 71.38, down 46. Natural gas. February, 254, up 2, and March is 237, up 4. And we'll talk about cattle and stuff coming up in the next break. The Dow is in the green, and the S&P and the NASDAQ. Looks like they're taking a pretty good hit today. And all right, let's go ahead and take our first break, and it's a Stockman's Veterinary Clinic break, that is. I'll have more on Stockman's coming up here real quick. We'll be right back after this.
The Day in Ag with Jimmy Clark. Mosey on down to Hobart Stockyards Weekly Cattle Sale. It's located on Highway 183 North in Hobart, Oklahoma. The sale is every Wednesday at 9:30. If you need to consign, call Rex Fleming at 580-331-8547. They receive cattle all day Mondays and Tuesdays. Buyers can bid in person or online. Hobart Stockyards, where we want your business and do appreciate it.
You can buy parts anywhere, but the people at our store are different than people at other stores. And if they're not, we're going to make them different. They should be more knowledgeable. They should be more friendly. They should be more customer-oriented. They should be part of the community. We pride ourselves of doing business with people. You can buy parts anywhere. It's the people that make the difference.
We try our best not to tell the customer no, but to find what they need. Napa Auto Parts of Elk City, 716 West 3rd. More parts for more cars.
Farmers and ranchers, listen up. It's time to make your life easier with the Hay Wagon from Everett's Welding and Repair in Visalia, Oklahoma. The Apache Hay Wagon hauls multiple bales of hay and helps reduce waste. Less waste means more money in your pocket. It'll pay for itself over time, plus make your life easier. What a deal. See all they have to offer at everettswelding.com. Again, that's everettswelding.com. And be sure to check out their ads inside the Penny News.
Where's your plumber when you need one?
In Elk City. That's where Klein Mechanical's ready to tackle those messy jobs that we all try to avoid. They're also looking to hire an experienced journeyman plumber with experience in residential, commercial, and utility work. Pays competitive along with a generous benefits package. To apply, just go by the Klein Mechanical office at 101 Stout Drive in Elk City or give them a call at 580-225-1242. That's 225-1242.
Calling all rural residents of Western Oklahoma and the Texas Panhandle. Are you tired of hauling off your own trash? Call D&G Trash Hauling. They can have a dumpster delivered to you in no time. D&G offers weekly or bi-weekly pickup in four different size dumpsters. You have a big job? D&G also has roll-offs available in several sizes. With D&G, you find affordable rates and no contracts. Satisfaction is always top priority. For more information, call D&G at 580-497-6950. That's 580-497-6950. Let D&G Trash get rid of your trash. At Lone Star Gin, 4.5 miles south of Pampa, Texas, on Highway 70, our mission is to provide superior customer service to our producers while getting their cotton ginned in a timely manner. We possess 120-plus bale-per-hour capacity, high-tech moisture systems, on-site sampling, and we move cotton in a timely manner from the field to the gin. With excellent hands-on marketing, our gin is designed to maximize profits for our farmers. Visit us at www.lonestargin.com or give us a call 806-665-0677.
Cattlemen's Congress in the heart of cattle country is far more than just a cattle show. See for yourself December 30th through January 11th at the fairgrounds in Oklahoma City. The newest and most elite genetics North American cattlemen have to offer will be there. Cattlemen's Congress is the gathering place of the cattle industry and provides sales of elite genetics, something for every operation. And stop by on January 4th or 5th for a commercial cattlemen's luncheon from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. For a full schedule, sale information, and everything you need to know, visit cattlemenscongress.com.
He loves talking about farming and ranching. Here's more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Yeah, it looks like the Cattlemen's Congress is in full swing. I've seen they posted last night where they was had a pair of Highland calf babies out there in the show ring. So anyways, I got to get an update from, I know some people from around here were there this weekend. I know Walter's Ranch was there, the Mouse Ranch was there. I'll have to get an update from them and see how things are going up there. Again, this coming Thursday, I will be doing my show live from the Cattlemen's Congress there in Oklahoma City. I'll be at the Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association booth. If you want to come by, I should be there for 2-3 hours and say hi. And if you got something really cool to talk about, I might even get you on the show. How's that? Anyway, it's going on. And speaking of that, let's go a little bit what's going on with the Angus Commercial Cattlemen's Day. That'll be Friday, January 5th, coming up. This event will be hosted by the American Angus Association. Features education, competition, and fellowship. So anyway, I think it looks like 8:30 a.m., the Super ROV Angus Pen and Carlo Show in the performance area. And then the association booth opens up at that same time. There's an educational program for all types of cattle producers moderated by Radio Oklahoma Network's Ron Hayes. Featured panelists include Mark Johnson of Oklahoma State University, Jesse Lucky of Snake Creek Cattle Company, and they got all kinds of good things going on over there. And then what do we got? 11:30, the Angus Luncheon featuring certified Angus beef. Imagine that. And then 2 o'clock, that will be, let's see, yeah, 2 o'clock will be the National Angus Bull Sale. Oh, and there we go. That's what's going on. So anyway, more information, I'm pretty sure you can go to the Oklahoma City Cattlemen's or go to the Cattlemen's Congress deal, and then you've got the American Angus Association. Just go to one of those if you want more information on what's going on out there. All right, let's check out some ag weather out in the Texas Panhandle. Canadian, 42 degrees, wind chills 36, humidity's at 60, dew points at 29. The wind is out of the west at 10 miles an hour. Peak wind gust today, 12 miles an hour. No month-to-date precipitation so far. Did you guys know yesterday is a rare day in the year that where yesterday we seen the warmest and the coldest day of the year so far yesterday in Oklahoma? Just want to throw that out there. First day of January. Red flag minutes, zero. Sub-freezing minutes today, 574 minutes. And 8-inch soil temperature, Canadian, Texas, is 39 degrees. They lost about 8 degrees in the last week and a half. So winter is creeping up on us. All right, let's see what the cattle market's doing. February, live cattle, 171.95, up 345. April's 174.47, up 222. June's 171.70, up 165. August is 172.32. up 130. Feeder cattle for January, this changed on me. Here we go. 225.12, up 282. March is 226.30, up 320. April's 231.90, up 3. May is 237.12, up $2.55. Lean hogs are, it's taking a tank. I gotta watch that word in case Jimmy Boyette's listening. February, lean hog, 64.90, down 307. April, 72 even, down 285. May is 79.90, down 160. And June, 87.87, down 205. Anyway, today is also Heyday Tuesday. There's so much to go on over there. Hey, if you guys got time to send me a text here to the Today in Ag text line at 580-225-9697. I'd like to hear some of your goals. What's your goals for this year? If you don't mind sharing them with me. 225-9697 to share your goals for the new year. See what's happening. Anyway, I got a deal from Paul Beck. Where is it at? There we go. I think we've mentioned this a couple times since I started the show, and I just want to keep reiterating. Alfalfa makes a good beef cow supplement. Paul Beck feels that better growing conditions for hay this past year in Oklahoma opens up some opportunity to use high quality hay as a beef cow supplement going through the winter. The same may be true in your state. The Oklahoma State University beef nutrition specialist notes that good or premium grade alfalfa in 4x4 large square bales were recently priced at $180 per ton, while premium supreme alfalfa was fetching around $200 a ton. Good grade alfalfa is 18 to 20% crude protein and 58 to 60% total digestible nutrients. Premium grade is 20 to 22% crude protein, and supreme is over 22% crude protein. With 20% range cubes priced at $10 a bag or $400 a ton, alfalfa's nutrient qualities make it an attractive option compared to feeding cubes, Beck asserts. Using the cow calculator beef cattle nutrition evaluation spreadsheet, Beck explains that a 1,250-pound cow in its third trimester of gestation grazing stockpile native range in January and February would need 6 pounds of supplemental 20% range cubes per day to meet her protein and energy needs. That would cost $1.67 per cow each day. If the same cow was fed premium alfalfa hay, she would need 9 pounds of alfalfa per day to meet protein and energy requirements. But the daily cost decreases to $1.19 per pound. Both research and past experience has shown us that alfalfa is an effective supplement for winter feeding, wintering beef cows, Beck notes. The beef specialist offers several points to consider when feeding alfalfa is a supplement. Supplementing forage will result in reduced intake of other forages, but will have less impact on forage digestion that concentrate than concentrate supplements of higher feeding levels. Do not feed alfalfa hay every day. Cows have been known to wait at the gate, and when they know that supplemental hay will be delivered daily, spoiled cow syndrome will kick in then. Provide supplements of on alternating days or up to every third day to balance distance of travel and amount of supplement required. Even a high supplemental rate does not appear to disrupt grazing activity during the off-feeding days. Dana Zook presented alfalfa as a winter protein supplement as part of Oklahoma State University's Ranchers Thursday lunchtime webinar series on October 21st, and that was back in 21. And she presented that same deal out here one day here of the Votech when the OSU Extension had a feeding day over there. I don't remember what the whole thing was over there, but she was over there, and that caught my attention, and I had her come on the show. So there you go. Well, let's go ahead and take a Stockman's Vet Clinic break, and when we come back, we'll have more to talk about.
Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
We feel like we want to be good stewards of our depositors' money. It's what keeps Community Bank going for as long as it has. This bank's seen it all. Starting 1901, you've seen a few droughts. You've seen some market crashes. Oil and gas come and go a few different times, you know, from the 50s to the 80s to the 20-teens. And we're here. We never sit there and go, oh, man, I hope our doors are going to be open tomorrow. We're going to be there. There's no doubt in my mind. I'm Jason Redd, and I help make the difference at First National Bank and Trust of Elk City and Sayre.
Member FDIC. Do you love the great outdoors? Maybe you enjoy trap shooting or skeet shooting, or maybe getting some target practice in at the firing range is your thing. If you're that person, you love guns. Hobart Farm and Garden has a whole room dedicated to guns, gun safes, ammunition, and more. It's quite impressive. You got to go check it out. They are Western Oklahoma's platinum Browning dealer and Glock stocking dealer. They're located at 1030 South Monroe in Hobart, Oklahoma. If they don't have it, you don't need it.
Important to keep your irrigation machines up and running during the growing season, because when your crops need water, they can't wait. And when you need parts, there's no substitute for the best. Valley Genuine Parts, from gaskets and gearboxes to booster pumps and boom bats. Valley Genuine Parts make all the difference to your operation. Contact your local Valley dealer, Knutson Irrigation, 1-800-373-9325. For all your irrigation parts, technology, and service needs, or online at KnutsonIrrigation.com.
That life insurance that I have on myself, it's not for me. It's for my wife, that she doesn't have to sell the home. She doesn't have to go worry about how am I going to make this car payment? How am I going to come up with the cost out of pocket to pay this funeral? Because, you know, that's an expensive cost. And it's a cost that you're going to have. If you had a machine in your garage that made money, it was a money-making machine. You went out every day, and you flipped the switch on that machine, and it generated money to pay your bills. Would you insure that machine? I've never had anybody say no. Sure they would. Well, you are that machine. You flip your switch on every morning when you get up. You flip your switch on when you go to work, but yet we don't insure ourselves. It doesn't make any sense to me. Hi, I'm Mickey Lively. I'm an insurance agent with Oklahoma Farm Bureau. My office is located in Greer County. Call me anytime at 580-782-3827.
Life insurance and annuity products offered through Farm Bureau Life Insurance Company. Property and casualty products are offered through Oklahoma Farm Bureau Mutual Insurance and affiliated companies.
This is the Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction Market Report for Monday, December 18th. 1,042 head were sold. 7 head of steers at 431 brought 313. 6 at 486 brought 279. 3 at 572 brought 239. 25 at 680 brought 241. 4 at 705 brought 235. 7 at 765 brought 233. 5 head of heifers at 442 brought 245. 20 at 631 brought 216. 15 at 644 brought 220. 6 at 698 brought 205. 20 at 727 brought 206. 39 at 829 brought 194. Butcher cows were 58 to 112. Butcher bulls brought 88 to 117. Bred cows were 1360 to 2025. Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction, exit 71, Clinton, Oklahoma. Sale every Monday at 10 a.m. To consign, call Mr. Brandon Hickey at 580-497-6095.
Oh, Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Here comes more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
All right, welcome back. Here's your ag weather update for Fairview, Oklahoma. Currently it's 32, humidity 64, winds are out of southwest at 8 miles an hour, 10-day rain total, 1.21 inches. It's 44 degrees there, but it feels like 39. 3-day average 4-inch bare soil temperature, 38 degrees. 1-day average 10-inch fractional water, 1.0. Sunset at 5:30. Today, mostly cloudy, 49 degrees. Tonight, patchy fog, 26 for a high. Tomorrow, mostly sunny again, 49 degrees, and be light winds out of the north, northwest. How about that for Fairview? All right, let's carry on. Okay, what do we got here? Oh, I got this for Sugar Daddy. He's a big Case IH guy, but anyway, I seen this article, and it was a pretty interesting article. The Case IH 3394 is the red hooded stepchild. This was Case and IH's first tractor together, and according to some people, it didn't live up to anyone's expectations. So let's talk about the Case IH 3394, or as I call it, the red hooded stepchild. Some of you diehard red guys are already rolling your eyes and thinking, here we go again. He's going to try to convince me these pieces of hot garbage weren't worthy. Were they worthy of red paint? Ironically, some of you diehard Case guys are cringing too. You're still mad that Racine willingly painted one of your tractors IH red and put Case IH decals on it. That was a new low. You never have forgiven them, and you're annoyed that I'm even bringing it up, and you're even annoyed that Jimmy's talking about it. These tractors managed to make a whole bunch of people mad just because they existed, which in my opinion is really dumb. Skip down to the end for my thoughts on that. They also managed to annoy a different group of people for other regions, which we will get into. Regardless, they hold a place in farming history, and since it's my column, we're going to talk about it. Plus, there's a nice one coming up on a retirement auction in Largewood, Iowa at the end of next week, if you're interested. So anyway, almost as soon as the merger was announced between Case and IH in 1984, wheels were turning to get the boxcar magnums into production. That left the management team with a dilemma. Both companies had stout competitors in high horsepower, row crop, and four-wheel drive market. Harvester had the Super 70s, and Case had the 94 series. What could they sell in interim that didn't need much refining? The Super 70 series was a good tractor in my opinion, but the initial batch of 7288s and 7488s struggled to gain traction with farmers. They were spendy and labor-intensive to build, and their style was polarizing. Farmers either loved them or they hated them. They were no in-between. On the other hand, Case had a full blown-up line, a fairly stout-framed, fixed-frame four-wheel drives, and an oddball full-time four-wheel drive row crop tractor that was the 3294 in the 94 series. It really didn't make sense to keep both lines afloat while the Magnum was being readied for production. Ultimately, the Super 70s got the axe, and Case started painting their tractors red. Good night, Snoopy. From 1989, for 1985, the 3294 was tweaked here and there, eventually being released as two different models, the 180 horsepower 3394 and the 202 horsepower 3594. Both had increased fuel and hydraulic capacity, bigger rear ends, and large frame power shift transmissions. All of the 33 and 3594s were painted red and racine and decaled as Case IH models. In hindsight, choosing to sell 3394, 3594 probably wasn't the greatest move. Personally, I think it was a political thing. The tension between Case and IH employees, it was there with the hardcore us visit versus them vibe going on. Sure, IH had a more refined technology stack, but Case held the purse strings. I think management chose to sell the Case lineup to help keep the peace while they prepped the Magnum. At the end of the day, though, I think the strategy backfired on both sides. The Case loyalists, the people loyal to Case, felt like the red paint betrayed their brand's roots, even though it was a J.I. Case underneath. The IH purists were firmly convinced that a tractor from Racine wasn't worthy of the red paint. In both cases, they felt slighted, and nobody was happy with the outcome. The Case IH 3394 and its bigger brother were truly tractors that nobody wanted. Despite the fact that Case and IH loyalists didn't like these tractors, they actually sold reasonably well. See, by 1986, Case IH had their sights on the Magnum's launch, and they wanted those old models off the dealer's lots quick, so they authorized some pretty big discounts. I think most of those tractors sold for less than half the sticker price, at around $70,000. If I had to guess, the only farmers who paid anything close to retail price for the IH 3395 were those who bought them actually in 1985. So timing played its part too. Tough economic times or not, sometimes you have to upgrade equipment. Period four. Farmers caught in the bind, it was a lot easier to buy the $30,000 bullet for a new 180 horsepower four-wheel drive tractor than the alternatives, even if they weren't head over heels on the tractor. Farming is about making tough calls, and we all know that. When the 3294 came out as a rigid frame full-time four-wheel drive, it was kind of the 11th hour deal. Farmers wanted a smaller package with four-wheel drive capacity, or capability, not capacity. In Case scrambled to meet the demand with minimal investment. Minimal investment usually means trade-offs, and this tractor had a couple major ones. Since you couldn't turn off the four-wheel drive, sharp turns were a no-go, and the front tires paid the price of the road, not to mention the 3294 only had one transmission option, a 12-speed small frame power shift that had a nasty habit of eating itself. So there you go. Now, that being said, it wasn't all bad. There were some good parts about these tractors. The turbocharged 504 engine Case stuffed under the hood had been refined multiple times, and it made very good power. It wasn't invincible, but it had a good long way. It had come a good long way from the 504 of yesteryears. Furthermore, when the row crop models rolled out of the factory, those engines weren't set anywhere near the upper limit. Overall, they were really a mixed bag. They were a stout tractor, but there were parts of them that just couldn't take abuse. You had to know how to handle them, and you had to drive with some serious purpose. Rookies need not apply. To sum it up in this story about the old Case, in one paragraph, there is a little old lady. It was a profile little old lady's tractor. Only drive it to the grocery store on Saturday and church on Sunday. It's that kind of tractor. If you're one of those rare people looking for a Case IH 3394, there is definitely one to get. But for those who are of you that are skeptical, we dig a little deeper. I knew the history hadn't been real kind to these machines, and part of it was for a good reason. They were known to be fragile, and they caused their fair share of headaches. So he called this guy, Jim Blowett, and chatted with him last Friday for a few minutes. And they're talking about a sale that's coming up here that he wants to go see this. The tractor has been part of the family's farming operation since it was bought new for many years. The family was loyal to Red, and this one came from Don Hubbard's dealership in Rock Rapids in 1986. Don Hubbard always took good care of us. We really like these guys. So there you have it. So it just issues, service history, upgrades, and all kinds of stuff going on there. So anyway, not one of the better stories on a tractor, but it happened, and I've seen some out there, and there's probably still some out there around in our area. All right, that's it on that. Let's go check out some hay prices if you want to. The average price for alfalfa hay retreated another $10 a ton during November, according to the USDA's Agriculture Prices Report. This was the seventh consecutive month of price decline since hitting a record high average of $287 per ton. The average alfalfa hay settled in at $207 per ton in November, putting it $60 per ton cheaper than a year ago. The average price for Supreme and Premium alfalfa during November dropped $7 a ton and settled in around $270, $271 a ton. In contrast to alfalfa hay, grass hay was pegged at $170 a ton in November, which was $6 per ton higher than October. The gap of $37 between alfalfa and grass hay price is the narrowest margin between those two, between grass and alfalfa, since March of 2021. And we all know what happened in March of 2021. Only two states posted double-digit month-over-month gains in alfalfa. Minnesota and Wisconsin were both up $13 a ton. Double-digit declines in November. Alfalfa hay occurred in eight states. Oklahoma led the group with $23 per ton month-over-month drop. Washington, Oregon, and Kansas were all down $15. Nebraska was down $11. California, Montana, and Wyoming dropped by $10 a ton. And keep in mind, people, what I'm reading here, what I'm talking about, is sales that are reported to the USDA. It might not come close to what's actually happening out here on our farm and ranches. The highest average November hay price was reported in New Mexico at $290 a ton. Texas followed at $268, with Colorado and Oregon checked in at $255 per ton. Midwest State continues to offer the lowest alfalfa hay prices. North Dakota, $120 a ton. South Dakota, $160 a ton. And Montana, $165 a ton. Keep in mind the USDA average prices account for all qualities and bale types of hay being sold. Anyway, let's see here. The USDA also tracks the prices of Supreme and Premium quality alfalfa in the major dairy states and determines average price from the five top milk producing states: California, Idaho, New York, Texas, and Wisconsin. For November, the average price of Supreme and Premium alfalfa had hay dropped $7 per ton to $271 after dropping $10 a ton in October. 1 year ago, the average price of Supreme and Premium alfalfa was $331 per ton. So hopefully things get better for the dairies starting today in January, and because they've had such a price drop in their product, and so, you know, hay hard to afford, so they had to change their ways. Monthly prices right now received for Premium and Supreme quality alfalfa hay, California, November was $400 a ton. November of 22, and then this year, November was $290, so $110 different. Minnesota was $211, now it's at $208. New York was $295, and it's actually up at $304 this year. Texas, November of 22 was $334 a ton. November alfalfa is at $309 a ton. The average across the board for those states, the main dairy producing states, was $331, now it's $271. In November, average price of other hay, mostly grass, bumped up to $170 per ton, which was $6 a ton higher than October, but $14 lower than a year ago. The highest November price for hay other than alfalfa was reported in Colorado for $250 a ton. New Mexico and Washington followed at $245 a ton. North Dakota has the lowest reported other hay average price at $80 a ton, and it was followed by Oklahoma at $117 a ton. So the average across the board for other hay, grass hay, in November of 22 was 184, and November of this year, 23, it's hard to get used to, I'm already into 24, was $170 a ton. All right, let's take a Stockman's Vet Clinic break. When we come back, I'll have your Hobart Farm and Garden Ag weather update for you.
The Day in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
If you need something and you could buy it now cheaper than later, it makes sense to buy it now. Lyle's giving you the opportunity to do the sensible thing. If you need ag tires, they're on sale until January 15th in Blair. Blair Tire and Feed's having a sale on all in-stock ag tires, including Firestone. The whole crew appreciates your business this year, and they're looking forward to helping you next year. Blair Tire and Feed at Highway 283 and 19. Pay less right now for all in-stock ag tires. This deal's good till January 15th.
It's known as the thief in the night. A lack of cattle mineral can lead to decreased weaning weights, small, weak calves, and severely compromised health. Don't let a gap in your feeding program rob your herd's performance. Stop by Farmers Union Co-op in Elk City and pick up a bag of Purina Wind and Rain Storm Mineral today. Farmers Union Co-op of Elk City is your authorized Purina dealer.
I say the future is ours! Can you dig it?
Oh, you sure can. Especially if you rent from DJ's Rentals and Sales in Elk City. Dig up those old sewer lines with a backhoe or mini excavator. Save time and money. Rent a post-hole digger to help with your next fencing project. You can dig it today when you rent from DJ's Rentals on South Main in Elk City.
Can you dig it?
Find out more, visit DJsRental.com. That's DJsRental.com.
We've been part of Western Oklahoma's ag industry since statehood. I'm Marty Maddox from Great Plains Bank in Elk City. We proudly support our local FFA labor auctions and premium sales. Our local lenders have a combined 127 years of banking experience. We handle all ag-related loans, like land purchases, farm operating loans, and stocker lines of credit. And we recently helped over 700 area farmers and ranchers with their PPP loans. Great Plains Bank in Elk City is here to lend agriculture a helping hand. Member FDIC.
SEI Agritech is excited to announce they're now open with their new LNC blending feed facility for their new product line at SEI Agritech 1400 South Randall in Elk City, with all the feed rations that you've come to know and trust. The new facility is the only LNC blending facility in the area. SEI Agritech in Elk City now open their new facility in their current location, 1400 South Randall in Elk City. For more information, give Kent a call at 580-225-0317.
Hey, cotton farmers, are you walking in high cotton? It's easier than you think. Have your cotton ginned fast and efficiently at Western Planters Cotton Gin in Hobart, Oklahoma. Bet you didn't know they have the largest gin in the state and the connections to get top dollar on your investment. They're located at the corner of Highway 9 and Highway 183, just north of Hobart. Be sure and check them out online. WesternPlantersCottonGin.com.
Whether you graze livestock or produce hay from perennial forages, the Night Latch Group helps farmers and ranchers manage production risk by utilizing the federal crop insurance programs. The Pasture Range and Forage Rainfall Insurance Program signups for the 24 calendar year are now till December 1st. PRF provides needed cash flow and pays producers during periods of below average rainfall. Insure your operation against lack of rainfall with no money up front. Hold on to your ag investment with the Night Latch Group, 580-334-7995. Remember, even wet years have dry spells.
He loves to talk about farming and ranching. Here's more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Mangum, Oklahoma, 40 degrees, feels like 35, dew point's 32, humidity's at 75, the winds are out of south at 7 miles an hour, 10-day rain total, 1.47 inches, 3-day average 4-inch bare soil temperature, 43, 1-day average 10-inch fractional water is not working, sunset's at 5:38, today mostly cloudy, 47, tonight mostly cloudy and 29, tomorrow sunny and 52 degrees. Anyway, that is your Hobart Farm and Garden Ag Weather Update for Mangum, Oklahoma. All right. I hear bits and pieces of people in Western Oklahoma having chicken litter brought in and for fertilizer. So I got this deal from K-State University that was really interesting. The use of poultry litter can contribute to reducing the cost of fertilizer inputs for many operations. Depending on the price and the transportation cost of litter, for many farmers, the use of poultry litter may represent significant savings, particularly in times of high fertilizer prices. However, for many producers, there is a hassle factor. When using poultry litter, reliable delivery, storage, site location, uniform application, access to application equipment, and the odor can be additional challenges to producers unfamiliar with its use and should be used in your consideration if you're going to use chicken litter. How to calculate it? How valuable is poultry manure? This may not be a straightforward answer and depends on several factors, including the nutrients required for a specific field. Here's one example using the average nutrient analysis values from Southeast Kansas. 56, 53, 46. How about that? 35%, year one, 35% of N is inorganic, all available. It equals 19.65 pounds of nitrogen. 65% of N is organic, 25% is available in year one. That's 9.1 pounds of per ton of litter. Total value of N available in year one is 62 cents a pound, which ends up being like $17.80 per ton of litter. On the P side, 50% of it's available in year one. That equals to 26.5 pounds of P2O5 per ton of litter. Total value of P in year one, 37 cents a pound, or $9.80 per ton of litter. The K is 100% available in year one, 47 pounds of K2 per ton of litter. Total value of K in year one, 28 cents a pound, or $13.16 ton litter. Total in year one, $40 total, $40.76. Anyway, works out pretty good. But anyway, storage, proper storage of manure is important to prevent runoff contamination of water and odor problems. The following practices should be utilized. Avoid stockpiling litter near homes, unless you don't like them. Public roadways and drainage ditches. Stockpile litter at least 200 feet from waters of the state. Use tarps on litter piles to keep litter dry, reduce odor, and reduce N losses. Create an earthen berm around piles to allow time for water and nutrients running off the pile to infiltrate. Additional considerations when selecting a suitable storage site. Take it to your neighbor you don't like and dump it off. No, I'm just kidding. Locate stockpiles in areas with minimal slope. Avoid sites that slope towards waterways and receive a lot of drainage. Locate sites in areas surrounded by grass to keep them for a buffer. If poultry litter is a regular part of your operations fertility program, consider constructing improved poultry litter storage sites. That includes a storage pad built on lime screenings, all-weather truck access, and a grass of cropland to buffer or to trap nutrients when the runoff's going off. That's from your K-State people. So anyway, hey, I got a few interesting text messages in here on your goals. These are pretty good. My goals for 2024, take the boat to the lake more, deer hunt more, watch the dogs point more quail, and try not to piss off the wife as much. Another one is use my rain gauge more, raise my organic matter, pull the trigger on a contract when wheat prices was $8 in August, encourage my neighbors to feed their own deer, and have more patience when aggravated. There I go. There's a couple of updates from some people out there. How about that? That's pretty good. Let's see here. You guys all know that the governor from Colorado, Jared Polis, I guess is how you say his name. Polis, one of those dudes. Polis, we'll go with Polis. One might think Colorado Governor Jared Polis would scale back his anti-agriculture campaign, at least publicly, after his tone-deaf proclamation of meat outdate on the first day of spring in 2021. But besides that PR fiasco, the governor again has thumbed his nose at Colorado ranchers with last week's covert wolf reintroduction. Colorado voters approved the reintroduction of gray wolves via a ballot measure in 2020. So the release of these five wolves on December 18th into the wilderness at Grand County was legal. But if it was legal, why all the secrecy? Anyway, that's not the only question Colorado ranchers are demanding from the governor. To date, Colorado Parks and Wildlife officials have released 10 gray wolves. And you guys, if you've been following this or been listening to my deal, the Colorado Parks and Wildlife officials are not big on this. They're not wanting to do it, but they got to do it because the voters voted it in. So far, 10 gray wolves, 4 males and 6 females at 2 locations on state-owned land in Grand and Summit counties. Wolves were eradicated from Colorado in the 40s in the controversial ballot measure Proposition 114 passed with a slim 51-49% margin. The state ranchers campaign against the ballot measure the Colorado Cattlemen's Association and the Gunnison County Stock Growers Association filed a last-ditch lawsuit last month in federal court against the Colorado Parks and Wildlife and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. The ranchers argued the reintroduction of wolves should be reviewed under the National Environmental Policy Act, and they asked the federal court to block wolf releases until the complaint is reviewed. The request was denied. Anyway, so that paved the way for the first introduction of the wolves and the governor's unusual photo opportunity. Colorado Public Radio Sam Brates was just one of the three reporters selected to be on site when the first five wolves were set free. How about that? Anyway, so they said these agency has flown these wolves in from Oregon, and they flown them in, those five that they released on December 18th. They flown five wolves from Oregon earlier that morning, and when we got there, each one was in these dark metal crates in the back of pickup trucks. They were driven to a small clearing where they were about 45 invited guests who wanted to watch the release. That included CPW officers, the governor himself, his husband. Wait a minute, my bad. Governor Polis, him, and his husband, and top wolf advocates from around the state. Then we watched the governor. I forgot about that, about the governor. My bad. Anyway, helps open each crate. Three of the wolves bolted up over a snow-covered road into the woods immediately. You knew that other twos took their time before kind of getting out of their crates and running into the wolf. See here, it looks like coming from Oregon, notably missing, according to the description of guests, were representatives from Colorado's ranching communities, which might have included some wolf opponents, yet the omission is likely because the wolves released already had rap sheets, as members of the packs were known to kill livestock already in Oregon. Wow. Anyway, they're going to release wolves that are already killing livestock in Oregon, bring them to Colorado. How cool is that? You read that right. The wolves released in Colorado comes from packs that have already killed livestock. Colorado Parks and Wildlife had chosen wolves for relocation that had already appeared on Naughty Wolf's list. Maybe except Wyoming, Idaho, and Montana refused to allow Colorado to adopt any of their wolves. So, man, this crazy stuff going on. Anyway, hope you guys have a great Monday. See you tomorrow. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark, brought to you by First National Bank and Trust of Sayre in Elk City, Oklahoma. God bless.